Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
Serving spiritual seekers around the world. Unity Online Radio.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. And today I welcome multi-talented woman of means and experience who has been a stunt woman, an actor, director, teacher, and trainer. She's a John Maxwell certified speaker. And she's been the president of the National Michael Chekhov Association, been involved with the Chekhovian School of Acting for many years. She's the creator of several DVDs and author of books about the Chekhov method, amongst many other achievements. Lisa has also attended Unity Church of Fort Worth for several years, so I know her quite well. So it's a joy to welcome Lisa Loving Dalton to today's show. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you so much, Paul, for having me. I'm really excited to be chatting with you on the show today.
You know, I've been reading your recent book called Falling for the Stars, A Stunt Gal's Tattletales, as it's called. It's a fun read, and I love the double meaning of falling for the stars, because you literally did take falls as a stunt person, but you also, there's that sense of being starstruck, isn't there, because you're in close proximity to these wonderful people as a double for them and learning a little bit more about them. So my first question is, what's the biggest lesson you learned from that part of your life of being a stunt person?
I think that's a great question, Paul. The biggest lesson I learned, I believe, has to do with really understanding your true values and listening to your inner guidance when what you're doing starts to go against your true values and your true talents. I feel like ultimately I went against what my instincts were telling me and what my spiritual guidance was giving me by ultimately staying in the business too long. And that sort of took a really hefty toll physically. And yet at the same time, that particular toll actually became the guidepost, the most important guidepost to getting me on my proper spiritual path.
So, of course, you ended your career because you had a bad fall, right, and had some injuries. But before that, you'd also took some damage, and it is a tough role, isn't it, to be a stunt person? I mean, it can be risky, and you have a moving chapter in your book where you describe three of your friends who were also stuntmen or whatever, and who didn't make it through. Right, they died.
Yes, and three very talented stuntmen in a 4-month period in completely unrelated events, different parts of the country, and all completely avoidable errors that happened. And it was deeply traumatizing, very, very deeply traumatizing. One of them mentored me quite a bit and provided, you know, many of the opportunities that I had to work on some great films, including Splash and Highlander. And so losing those people because of very avoidable errors was very traumatizing, and it really did make me think carefully about what I was doing and why I was doing it. And yet, honestly, Paul, I think it shows in the book, I hope it shows in the book anyway, that I got sort of so sucked into sort of the ego trip of it and the financial rewards and sort of being a hotshot, you know, a gal who jumps tall buildings and goes through plate glass windows and crashes motorcycles on cue. And there's something, you know, very attractive about being somebody who can wow movie audiences with their physical skill sets and who can meet the threshold of danger with aplomb, with grace and awareness. And also because I fought so hard to sort of make my way into the industry, and I'd sort of finally gotten to the top there, and all of a sudden I knew I wasn't supposed to be there. But even after my three friends died, I still couldn't walk away from it.
And you'd originally wanted to be an actor, right, before you went into stunt work?
Yes, I've always been an actor, and I continue that. And fortunately, after the injury, I was still able to make my living as an actor in the entertainment industry. But yes, I really went into stunts because I was an athlete, tomboy, and stage martial artist, stage combat, gymnastics, clowning. I was a professional clown. So I translated those theater skills into that film career with the hopes that it would provide me more acting opportunities, which for a little while it did. However, I was warned on my very second job that if I stayed in the field of stunts for more than about 5 years, I would get typecast, as they say, into being just a stunt woman, and that it would actually block my acting career. And I did find that that's what happened.
Right. I can see how that would. Yeah, because people see you in a certain role. I think that happens in life in general, doesn't it? Once a person is seen to be a certain way, you know, they're accepted that way, and we can't see them in any other way. I think that can happen in a relationship too. When you see your spouse or your partner as you know, a certain kind of person, they have to fulfill that for you. Otherwise, you know, something's wrong. Well, I think a lot of relationships fall apart because the person grows beyond the role that they've been forced into, so it's sad when that happens, though. And I think we do it with pretty much anybody we meet, right? We sort of, they say first impressions are extremely important. You sort of make up your mind about somebody in those first few minutes, and then it's hard to move beyond that sometimes.
I think that's really astute, Paul. I do think we tend to unconsciously, I believe it's unconscious for most of us, when we meet people and we develop relationships, we look at how that person meets a certain need that we have, and they become the person who provides X or Y or Z for us. They become that role for us, and when they grow or change, we resist that. And it's really important for us to, as a culture, as individuals, welcome the shifting growth opportunities, especially now, because in years and decades past, the tools for changing, for deep change, really weren't very available. You kind of only changed your personality when you had a life crisis. And now we can actually study and change our lives through spiritual investigation, through self-development, and many other means that are so readily available now. And with that, we absolutely have the responsibility, if we are the ones changing, to have compassion for the people who are with us that don't understand that change, and help them, you know, understand it and adapt and be tolerant of their needs, and or have the courage and strength to reorganize and restructure who's in our circle.
Because, you know, you say, you know, it's kind of strokes the ego to be around, you know, that world, and I'm sure it does, to be around the world of celebrity. And, you know, even if we're not the celebrities ourselves, we're kind of the second string underneath the celebrities and have our own kind of celebrity, right? And you're mimicking the celebrities, too, with the body doubles and whatnot. So did you find on the whole that, you know, the celebrities, quote, actors and those sort of people who were in the public eye, were they good-hearted people? I know you mentioned a couple of times that you found, I think it was Madonna and Meryl Streep, to be, you know, generous, loving, kind people. Because there's sometimes we get this idea that they're all, you know, they're all kind of oversized egos, right? And are very demanding and that kind of thing. So what was your overall feeling for that?
My overall feeling was that, first of all, on the side of, you know, the less than generous and wonderful, was that side was simply, in, from my perspective, never anything cruel or rude or disrespectful. There were certain celebrities who more or less kept to themselves and didn't really interact a whole lot. And I understand that quite a bit, because there are so many demands placed, and we just don't know, until we've had those demands placed on us, what it's like to have constant, really 24/7 surveillance on you, the public eye, especially in this day and age, looking to spread information, gossip, opinions. You know, they vilify you, they crucify you, and or they deify you. And it's important for a star of that level to maintain some level of sanity and their art. I mean, when we're on the set and you are being paid millions of dollars to carry a film, you have a lot of pressure on you to deliver a great performance that's going to generate that kind of interest. And if you don't, your career's dead. And so some stars do need to stay in what I would call sort of a protected bubble. Other people have, I think they have it so together that they really can carry, they've got a center core of confidence in who they are. Like you mentioned, Meryl Streep was just amazing and generous. I talk also about Robert Redford, how great he was in Legal Eagles that I did with Daryl Hannah and Deborah Winger. And Robert Redford knocked me down repeatedly like 7 or 8 times. And after each time he came over and asked me how I was and did I want him to do anything differently. And it just was so nice and considerate. But the biggest surprise was Cher. And that was really, really delightful. She was very available, very sociable, and very much really wanted to sort of support me when I ran into some of the misogyny that is kind of rampant in that industry. So I found her to be very supportive in that regard, personable, and also she sent me an autographed 8x10 picture of us together, which was really generous.
And you're dressed alike, aren't you, in your role? And it's a good picture. It's you know, you look very much like each other there in that photo. Yeah. It's lovely. Yeah. So you mentioned that a couple of times, that there's lots of people out there who you know, want to exploit you, and of course we're familiar with this. You know, wherever there's lots of money and power, There's going to be people who want to exploit that and want you to do things. I guess the seedy dark side of celebrity or of power in general. But you didn't succumb to any of that, right?
Well, not.
Well, you're not going to share with us today.
Yeah, well, where I succumbed was in that fear of trusting that I had a different path and the fear of letting go of being somebody, because as a stunt person, as a stunt woman, you're one of a handful of women in the world who are certainly in that era who are doing these amazing things. And I can open up a conversation with anyone when I say, oh, you know, I did movies like Splash, Ghostbusters, Money Pit, Highlander, Crocodile Dundee, FX, Married to the Mob. I worked with and met Katherine Hepburn. I met Audrey Hepburn, Lucille Ball, Carol Burnett, Dick Van Dyke fell in my lap. I mean, you know, I can tell stories about that, and that's sort of really playing on the ego. It's a way for the sort of insecure, fearful part of me to assure that I can be safe in any environment just by name dropping. And that's one of the more subtle little evils that I definitely claim I am guilty of that. And while it's also, you know, maybe not so great, it actually is part of entertaining. I am innately an entertainer. And when people get a thrill out of sort of touching the shadow of the stars, you know, when they meet me and I doubled Meryl Streep, they're just one step away from Meryl Streep. Or if they love Madonna, they're one step away because I doubled Madonna. So, you know, meeting someone like Katherine Hepburn, oh my goodness, you know, she literally, I trembled when I met her. So that was a very humbling experience. And I can lighten someone's day. I can help people really enjoy and feel special and excited. So that is the very positive part of sort of sharing that. That's the healthy, I think, caring and giving aspect of sort of using my history as a stunt woman to uplift and enlighten. And I hope the book ultimately does that.
Yeah, so this just came out, right? But you've written other books, as I understand, about other parts of your life as well. So briefly tell us about some of those, too.
Yes, I have just released Murder of Talent, How Pop Culture is Killing It. And it is part autobiography, it's part political diatribe, and part masterclass. It kind of addresses these some of the elements we've just been speaking about what talent is subject to. Anything from, you know, when you're 5 years old and you're doing the school pageant, everybody huddles around and cheers, even if you fall flat on your face. They think you're wonderful. But by the time you start wanting to pursue that as a career, you start expressing interest in high school or something, you know, the cool people, the jocks or whatever, start harassing you, calling you nerd, even if nerd, you know, they start judging your gender and your preference. And it's like if you're going to go into arts of any sort, it also happens if you're going to try to pursue a profession as an athlete or something. All these people start saying, oh, don't do it. What if you get hurt? What if you're not good enough? Don't keep up your day job. Make sure you get an education in business or something. And a lot of our very talented people go off into careers that they're very unhappy in, and they become terribly dysfunctional adults, terrible role models if they have children and things like that. They're they're very unhappy, and they infect society because of their unexpressed artistic impulses. And some of them go kind of crazy. And then there are other people who the culture turns into a star. I mean, we make stars out of so-called reality shows, which is just, ego-driven personality tracking. There's nothing real at all, those.
But now, of course, that's what makes alternative facts, palatable or not palatable, understandable, because, we're already in the place of intense illusion. We'll talk more about that when we come back. We're at the break. I'm with Lisa Loving Dalton, and we're talking about her career as a stunt person and what happens afterwards. So in the second segment, we're going to see what's happened after she gave up that, or was forced to give up that part of her life for something greater, perhaps. And we'll find out what that is after these messages from Unity.
Unity Online Radio brings you inspiring programs on a variety of spiritual topics. Giving to the network is now easier than ever. Simply text Unity Radio to 72727 from your smartphone. You can make a one-time or recurring donation. Your gifts help us offer enriching spiritual programs that reach listeners around the world. Text Unity Radio to 72727. Thank you for your support.
You have a coach in your corner, a life coach, that is. Like a coach in sports, a life coach can help you set clear goals and develop the confidence and tools you need to achieve them. Join certified life coach Carla McClellan Tuesdays at 3 p.m. for Vibrant Living on Unity Online Radio. Each week, Coach Carla and her guests will share strategies and solutions designed to help make your life more focused, more meaningful, and more vibrant. Do you have a specific issue or topic you'd like to discuss with Coach Carla? Call in toll-free Tuesdays at 3 p.m. during Vibrant Living, Life Coaching with Carla.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
So welcome back to today's show on World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, check out my website, pauljohnroach.com. I'm doing a blog every Thursday called Staying Creative. You can check that out. I'm also posting it on my Facebook. So have a listen. Give me some response. And respond to any of my shows on World Spirituality. You can email me at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. Always happy to to hear your viewpoints, your questions, whatever it might be. So today I'm with Lisa Loving Dalton. We're talking about her career, her many careers, actually, because she's been involved with so many things. But the large career is a stunt woman that ended in 1989 with some injuries. Before the break, we were talking about her latest book and about illusion in general. The latest book is called Murder of Talent, How Pop Culture is Killing It. And, you know, I think we've become habituated to what we call reality TV, which is less than real, of course. And even our president, current president, had a kind of a reality show, didn't he? The Apprentice, which it was fun. It was a fun show, but it was also, you know, sort of a little bit illusory as well. And simplistic, you know, you're fired, to give the famous line. Life is rarely as simple as that, but it does make a great line for a show. But you know, we were talking about alternative facts. You know, the alternative facts are upon us now. I mean, some of us see correlations with 1984. You know, the novel by George Orwell. But I think they're upon us because for years we've been habituated to calling something that's unreal reality, and as spiritual students as well, we know that a lot of what we take for real is really the unreal, right? That it's an illusion, as we might say, or it's illusory. It doesn't have any underlying reality. And yet we take it as such. So nothing is as it seems. I think who was who said that? W.S. Gilbert and Gilbert and Sullivan. Nothing is as it seems. Skimmed milk masquerades as cream. And the sentence a lot, doesn't it? So where are you on that continuum of illusion and alternative facts?
Well, it's a very interesting idea. I mean, first of all, the entire entertainment career is about creating the magic.
Right.
And so the central premise of creating an illusion, the fundamental statement for all theater educators is that we are in the art of leading the audience to suspend their disbelief, right? They have to stop not believing. We need for them to believe the illusion that we're creating. We need them to buy into the story. And so that's the whole industry built on this and has been in many respects since the caveman. I mean, the storytelling industry, it's the oldest in the world. It's not going out of style. And the use of metaphor and archetypes and things like that are what we see playing, what you were just talking about The Apprentice and on these bachelor, bachelorette things and other things is the storytellers are the editors and producers who contract these many times actual actors, although they're not allowed to announce that, and they're contracted to silence. But they are many times actually people acting who are contracted to have a basic flaw, to play a certain archetype. She's going to play the weepy one. She's going to play the jealous one. She's going to play the bitchy one. She's going to play, etc. And so that we have this built-in conflict, which is, of course, the basis of all storytelling. And the fundamental illusion that we all live with is this illusion of separation, the great misunderstanding that most spirituality seeks to resolve, which unity is all, you know, absolutely centered around, the concept of unity, which is essentially aiming to make the illusion of separation disappear. For me, it has been anyway, as a unity practitioner. And so the illusion of reality, us accepting that there are actually these families out there who magically let a camera into their home and pretend that this is normal life. Well, that would be absolutely boring. And I've worked on reality shows, so I know what I'm talking about. There are 7 or 8 cameras shooting at one time in a scene. And, you know, there's a sit down beforehand and there's an explanation. This is what needs to happen here. And then everybody sort of goes for it. And it's really improvisation, and it's not reality in that regard. So people who are where the big danger to society comes in is the impact that mistaking these illusions as reality does for the human being, because each of these shows is a model of behavior. So we see people going out into the world modeling these characters and feeling validated for their bad behavior, because these shows validate bad behavior. And this needs to stop. This is really what Murder of Talent is about, because the murder, we are murdering true talent, and it's killing our culture, and the culture can't stop it unless they choose not to buy it. So the ball is in the culture. The ball is in the audience's court, because all of the entertainment is for one single purpose, and that is to uplift, entertain, enlighten the audience. So audiences need to demand better.
Well, you know, in the sacred art of drama and religion, and there's many correlations between the ritual of in religion and the ritual within drama, right? You're entering into that space or that container where you know you are suspending disbelief, you know, as Coleridge said, and you're entering into a world that points towards a deep metaphor, a deep mythological idea, universalized truth, right? So you're not taking it literally, and that's the suspension of disbelief beyond the literal. And unfortunately, the elements of this have been used, you know, by reality TV and by alternative facts, but not to illuminate anything, not to enter into a metaphor or a deeper understanding of reality, but simply to confuse, you know, to confuse the container of this magical place with, you know, everyday life, so that we all feel like we're, you know, in some sense, we all want our 15 minutes of fame, you know, as Andy Warhol put it, you know, that we think that that's the ultimate thing, and really these celebrities are guiding us into universal truths instead of guiding us to be, you know, them. I mean, that's not the purpose here, but we've mistaken this, I think, and so, you know, it's a very sad debasement of who we are, because I think religion and drama, you know, teach us that we have something universally wonderful within us, that's within everyone, whereas when we see it on a superficial level, we just project it onto another person and see, well, if they've got it, maybe I can have it too. So, yeah, we begin to model that. And that's often bad behavior because, like you said, it's boring to film a regular life, you know, because there's so many humdrum moments. So, you know, we want ultimate drama. We want bad boys being nasty to bad girls or whatever. And, you know, because that's fun. But then we go out and do the same thing ourselves. And we've seen that degradation, I think, in terms of our lack of civil discourse, courtesy, the fact we have leaders who are, you know, intensely rude to other people and do things that are really low-life things, and yet they can get away with it, it seems, because there's nobody knows what's right or wrong anymore in some ways.
Yep, and I really think we need to stop this. I think the public needs to realize that this, you know, they need to stop buying these, you know, trashy stories about talented people who are struggling to make it, talented people need to be raised and groomed to be able to withstand being vilified and crucified and deified. I think most spiritual leaders understand themselves as a conduit for spirit. And when the artist, the musician, the athletes, right? All our athletes are entertainers, because anyone who needs a fan to buy a ticket or to buy, a piece of music, anyone who needs a fan in order to pay their rent falls in this category of being truly a conduit for a higher power. You know, when we're in the zone state, we are not doing anything. It is happening through us. And when we think that we personally have generated it, and when we think we personally failed to generate it, that creates a huge emotional pressure, because our entire sense of esteem, sense of self-compassion and value rises when we have absolute adoration and success, and it plummets the moment we fail or the moment we're left alone. And this is where your drugs and your mood alteration and everything start to really kill some wonderful, wonderfully talented people, the Heath Ledgers and the Princes and Michael Jackson and Whitney Houston, Robin Williams, Philip Seymour Hoffman. All these people were incredible talents who were never trained to be able to stand on the pedestal and understand that all they were when they were on that pedestal is a conduit for a mm-hmm. higher spirit. And so when they came down off it and were left alone, they experienced a deep sense of trauma and emptiness and a need to escape. And so, that these traumas, the way to cope with these things needs to be built in from childhood. You know, parents need to recognize talented children and nurture them in ways that are going to help them sustain the acceptance or the so-called non-acceptance or rejection of their talents.
Well, I like what you said earlier, and that is, it's not about them, you know, it's about the spirit moving in and through them. And I think that's true for all of us when we're remembering what's really going on. We can't truly be empowered if all we are is you know, an ego. We're empowered when we realize we're vessels for that numinous, that divine to express. And when that's the case, then, you know, it becomes easier, doesn't it, to take on the burden. We see many leaders who can do this, you know, who still have the humble common touch. I think some presidents in recent times have exhibited that. I think some personalities, you know, celebrities have chosen a spiritual path. I know that there's Russell Brand is very involved with his own spiritual path. Jim Carrey has made a number of movies about spiritual themes, you know, and they seem mm-hmm. grounded in something beyond and above their celebrity. They're not enamored of it. I think there's others. I think Robert Redford's a good example of somebody that has poured out his passion into, you know, the Sundance Music Festival. Others have a safety valve in caring for others. You know, they go to the third world and do projects. And I think that helps, you know, bring them down to, what's really going on, rather than the dream factory, right, of Hollywood or whatever.
Yeah, it's true. And that just reminds me of Cher, who does an incredible amount of charity work, which very few people are even aware of. So even stars you don't think of, who don't actually go out and and publicize what they're doing, do a tremendous amount of work. And even on a smaller level, you know, I myself worked, I played golf with a number of other celebrities who were, you know, we would call us more or less, you know, celebrities in the second, third tier of celebrities, people who've had careers, and some whose names you may or may not recognize, or ones who became famous for a particular show and didn't do very much that they were famous for following that. We played and donated our time raising funds for many, many charities. And one can say, well, yes, sure, you get to go somewhere and play golf and somebody pays for you to do that. But really, for us, it was a job. We would go, we would be on for an entire weekend. People would be paying sometimes $10,000 a piece to play golf with us. And it was our job to uplift them, entertain them, enlighten them, and make them feel like what they had just given to the Barbara Sinatra, you know, Abused Children's Center, or to Make-A-Wish, or to one of my favorite, Alice Cooper's Solid Rock Foundation. And so there are a lot of people out there who are working actors who do a tremendous amount for charities to help raise funds, and people never know about that.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe that's good, you know, because what did Jesus say? You shouldn't let your left hand know what your right hand's doing, which he means, you know, don't always, you know, publicize everything you're doing, because you lose the blessing of it when you do that sometimes, because the motivation is not pure. So sometimes it's good not to publicize. Like, we don't publicize if we tithe or whatever, we just do it because we're grateful to be part of the flow. But different levels of understanding of all that. You know, you have had a wonderful career since the injury, and of course you learned in some ways the tough way, right? But took on various healing modalities, and you mentioned in your book neuro-linguistic programming and new ways of repatterning, neurological repatterning, things like that, hypnosis. And these have been effective for you.
Yes. And in addition, of course, meditation and a lot of visualization and tapping and many, many different modalities. I crashed into a cliff in 1989, December 7th, and I ricocheted back and forth on a pendulum between two walls of a cliff several times, and it took over a year for the doctors to accurately diagnose the problem. And the problem was that my vertebra had been destabilized, so I didn't look like I had a problem. When they would lay me down on a table and do an MRI or an X-ray, they'd lay me out and line everything up the way they do on crosshatches, etc. And my spine looked perfect to them. But what they couldn't see, was that the moment I would roll over, sit up, twist, take a step, that my spine would slide and crush my spinal cord and crush the nerves running down my legs. So I could suddenly be on the floor for, you know, no explainable reason. I take three steps and crash, I'm down. And our wonderful, amazing choir at Fort Worth Unity, which I'm so proud of, was, you know, saw this because I always was in the back of the rehearsal room where I could stand up. And frequently when I would perform, I'd be in the back row, not just because I'm tall, I'd frequently be on the end so that if I needed to, I could stand in as quickly as possible because I was subject to excruciating pain at any given moment. And this was an interesting thing for me, in part because to the outside world, I looked like a vital, healthy person. And most people didn't sort of understand that I was in extreme chronic pain for over 24 years. And what that caused in the beginning was sometimes I would spend as much as a month in bed, unable to move at all, complete paralysis, and having to sort of rediscover how to function and rediscover my identity, because I went from literally, I leapt across an alley on six floor rooftops. I mean, that's like Superman. So here I was like Superman, and all of a sudden I was an invalid. Right. And I had to go through a huge adjustment in my ego and my identity. And I was 37 years old. I was unemployable. It took 4 years for the medical community and California Work Comp to finally agree that I had a 46% permanent loss of use of my back, and they awarded me $31,000, which didn't go very far. But I did get lifetime care, but what I had to go through, because they weren't willing to help me, and they all dissuaded me from having surgery at that time because it was too dangerous, and they couldn't guarantee that it would heal my pain or enable me to walk on stairs and walk on pavement and things like that. When my husband, Ken Kerman, and I, when we would go to like Costco, he'd take one of those giant carts because I could lie down on it because I couldn't really make it back to the back of the store, and I couldn't walk a block on paved surfaces. So it eliminated from my life everything like going to museums and going to hikes and going, you know, all my athletics instantly stopped. I gained huge amount of weight because I was dancing 4 to 6 hours a week, and I got asthma because my lungs atrophied, and it just led to a whole series of things. But fortunately, I had the radio, and I had Lisa Gar's Aware show in California right there, and she was able to bring on unknown people like some weird doctor with a funny name, Deepak Chopra, something like that, and I got to pay, you know, $20 to sit in a room with 100 seats, 25 of which were filled, to hear this young man talk about some amazing things. And so I was right in on the cutting edge of getting to hear amazing guests on the radio whose books I began to read and whose guidance I began to practice and adopt. And that's where I found my master mentors who helped me get certified in these trainings, the NLP and the neurological repatterning, and begin to apply those, so that eventually, it took about 15 years, but I was able, with a special pair of shoes, I was able to start walking again. I could walk maybe up to an hour, which totally changed my life. That was amazing. And yeah. I could start to sit. I could sit through a movie. I could sit through a meal. And that was amazing. And the work that I was studying when I met Deepak Chopra, I saw things he was explaining. They actually explained this acting technique that I had fallen in love with when I was a stunt woman. I, at the same time, became a follower of Michael Chekhov's acting technique. And that acting technique is a spiritually based movement, imagination, and spirit. So Mr. Chekhov believes that the story exists in a higher realm, and that we each have this higher ego, and we can center ourselves and invite the characters, invite the story to reveal itself and we can train ourselves with a set of movements that are like a musician's set of scales or something. And anybody can do this. You can do these movements, and it will allow you to get incredible ideas and be able to do them. And so I became really obsessed with this approach. And in California, I started documenting on video. I traveled and taught. I was with the quantum and the metaphysics and everything I was learning from these great spiritual leaders. I was able to teach Michael Chekhov's work in a new way. And I taught in Russia and in Berlin and in Paris and in Brussels and London. And I did an award-winning documentary on the subject that Gregory Peck narrated. And I launched international organizations that have over the 25 years brought the Chekhov technique to places all over. And what I do now is I mentor mostly teachers. I do have a few clients from, in the movies that I coach online, and some actually fly into Fort Worth to do private sessions on their film roles to work with this material. And another gift from the radio was Tom Bird. And Tom Bird, I think many of our Unity listeners will recognize Tom Bird as an author who has a Write Your Book in a Weekend program. And I was fortunate in 2014 to get, I finally got a surgery on my back. And it, and before that, and Paul, you probably remember this, I had to stop going anywhere because I couldn't drive. Or maybe you weren't aware of this. That's why I stopped coming to church, because I couldn't drive. My leg was paralyzing at random times. I was sitting at a light and my foot was on the brake, and I went to take it off the brake when the light changed, and it wouldn't move. It just wouldn't move. And if that had happened when my foot was on the accelerator, not good. And then I got on my motorcycle. I went to put air in the tire, and my whole leg collapsed, and my arm fell into the pipes and burned my arm. And I was like, okay, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. I can't go. My body was deeply disintegrating. It took me 8 months of legal battle to finally get work comp to agree to do the, get to pay for the surgery. And I had a fantastic surgeon at the Texas Back Institute up in Plano, and that allowed me to actually sit and write. And Tom Bird, so he visits a lot of Unity organizations, and I saw him at Unity Dallas and heard him on the radio first, and I did a virtual retreat with him a year ago, March, the first week of March a year ago. And I wrote Murder of Talent and about two-thirds of Falling for the Stars that weekend.
Wow, amazing. So yeah, we're almost at the end of the show. I hate to cut you off because this is very fascinating. But I have a question. What would you say to somebody that's going through similar difficulties? What would be your advice, just in a few words, because we are right at the end here? What could they do?
Always reach out to me at lisadalton.com, lisa@lisadalton.com. I love to help guide people. So if someone has something specific that I might help them, they should write to me.
Okay.
Also, find out what you truly want to be doing, because some people think they want to do something, feel the need to do it, and think they have to be professional at it in order to be achieving satisfaction, and that's not true. You can be an amateur at it and do something that you love. Do something you love. In Murder of Talent, I drew my own sketches because I've grown up thinking I'm terrible at drawing. So Mm-hmm. I drew my own and published them. That took a lot of nerve.
Yeah. That's right.
Go do something you've been afraid to do and pretend it's brilliant.
There we go. Good advice. All right. Let me tell you about next week, and then we'll say goodbye to Lisa. Next week, my wife Wendy joins me, and our topic is the seeming dichotomies of time and eternity, finite and infinite, gradual and immediate, and how they figure into our lives and give us everything we need, actually, to marry the two together. And as Lisa's demonstrated, you know, we're very human and finite beings in some degree. We're subject to spinal injuries and a host of other things. And yet we also have indomitable spirits that can deal successfully, as Lisa has, with her difficulties and come forth victorious. So I want to thank Lisa Loving Dalton for being on the show today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Paul, and I hope everyone will visit me at lisadalton.com and to check out my books on amazon.com.
Yeah, exactly. Check out the books. And thanks for listening, folks. Hope to hear from you and tune in next week. All right. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Experience the peace and joy promised by A Course in Miracles? Or are you still struggling to truly live your beliefs from moment to moment? Let Reverend Jennifer Hadley help you focus on your intent to be the love, be the peace, through practical application by walking your talk. Experience the healing live every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Central on A Course in Miracles, Living the Love, Walking the Talk, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
When we think of peace, we may imagine ourselves sitting high on a mountaintop at daybreak or walking on a secluded beach while the sun sets. But peace isn't a luxury reserved only for special occasions or special places. It's an essential tool for daily living. My peace isn't dependent upon a particular place or event. At any time and in any circumstance, I can shift my focus from the appearances of life to the reality of peace within myself. Park Cousins said, "How things look on the outside of us depends on how things are on the inside of us." So if you don't like what you're seeing around you, paint a different picture within you. Peace. What I see is what I get. Peace can begin with me.
To find a Unity Church near you, please visit our website at www.unity.org.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.